Good evening and welcome everyone to The Buzz Studio, W The Buzz, your global radio network. You guys know we circle the world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with the finest in broadcasting anywhere. And now it's time for the Boomerang Radio Show. I want to welcome everyone, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are. Hey, this is going to be a really, really important discussion. So please share with your friends. If you're on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, wherever you are, just let us know. All right. Also, you can download one of our free apps. Just go to studiow.buzz. That's from your Apple App Store. Again, that's studiow.buzz. Android is simply Studio W. Their website is studiow.buzz. Studiow.buzz. Hey, welcome to the panel. Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery, how are you, sir?
Okay, hope you can hear me all right.
I'm loud and clear. Brother Danny Tisdale. Hey, my friend.
Good evening.
Right. And I am so happy to introduce our special guest tonight, Mr. Gary Hawk. Hey, Gary.
Hi there, sir. How are you?
I am terrific, man. It's been several years since we talked. Several years. I was telling Dr. Demery, I said, man, I like Gary a lot. We've got to have him back on. And what was it, back in 2017, 18, somewhat? You guys remind me. I think it was last time you were on the Boomerang, Gary. Was that around 17?
The last time I was on the Boomerang, I happened to be with Dr. Demery, and we were met in the actual studio. So it was a long time before the pandemic.
Yes, it was. It was a great discussion. So glad, man, that you're back with us. And we're going to talk about some topics that are very much in your wheelhouse, sir. And before we get to you, we're going to welcome my good friend and host of the Eden as an Act of Worship Ministries radio show, Ann Wooten Taylor. Hey, Ann.
Hello. Hey, William. How are you?
I'm terrific. We've got Mr. Gary Hawk. I don't know whether we mentioned him to you or not, but Mr. Gary Hawk, he graced us with his presence several years ago. And I don't think any one of us can figure out how long ago it was, but it was too long. It was way too long. So let's get right to it. Gary.
Glad to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you again. Gary, I want you to share with us, you can tell your story better than we can. And we want to talk about what you do, your vocation, your expertise. But I do understand that you are a professor, and I'm going to leave it just like that. Can you kind of tell us, what is it that you teach? What is your focus? And just take it from there, sir.
Currently, I have a PhD in economics and political science. I teach at one of the Cal State universities in their public administration department. And even though that my degree is in economics and poli-sci, they have me teaching this course called Society, Business, and Governance. And so I take a political economy approach to it, and we look at everything from U.S. history to obviously economics, political science, business, international trade. The list is rather endless.
Wow. I understand also that you teach your students are quite diverse.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I've had students from all over the world in my class.
Wow. Now, when you start talking about politics, Gary, let's talk about, I really wanted to break down today because there's a lot of misinformation that's going around, disinformation as well, about, the recent indictments of the current president. And I think I'm going to jump into this very quickly, and how politics is really disturbing the process that's going on, because we claim to be a country of laws, but it only seems to apply to some people. And if you do the crime, you know, they say, hey, you must do the time. But there are certain people that will talk about that and want to enforce that as long as it's not them. Now, the former president, we all know that he's been twice impeached. Four times indicted. He's facing 91 felony charges. I want you to jump right in. I want the panel also to, we want to give your expert opinion about that, then we'll ask you some questions going along the way. Some people say the process is unfair. Oh, it's unfair. He shouldn't be treated like that. What happens if we do not, if we hold someone above the law and prosecute those of us that aren't?
I'm going to give you two things to think about, but there are two theories that are in political science, and they generally are espoused by the more conservative members of the academy. And one of them is called the unitary executive theory. It's also been, it was heavily promoted by John Yoo. It was promoted by Bill Barr, Justice Clarence Thomas. And the bottom line of the unitary executive theory is that president is above law.
Mm.
Because all of the powers of the presidency are vested in the president, that therefore they can essentially do what they want.
Okay.
And all of a sudden my mind slipped a gear and I can't think of what the other one was. I had it until I started talking.
That's quite
awesome. It happens to all of us.
Yeah. So, oh boy, we've got Mike Ward.
Are you there?
Mike, he's there. He has his picture there and his mic is muted. But Mike, there he is. Mike.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good evening, depending on where you are.
Good evening. Hey. Good evening. And before we continue, Gary, I'd like to introduce you to another great friend of mine and also the co-host of the Mad Mike and Wild Will Coast to Coast show. Gary, if you love music, you might want to tune into that show on Thursdays. Mike and I, we play a variety of music, various genres. You can hear anything from classical to jazz to blues to gospel to country. And that's the whole premise of this show, is to expand not only our musical horizon, but our audience as well. And so, Mike, we have Gary on, and Gary is a professor. Hey, Gary, is it okay to disclose what school you teach, where you teach?
Only if I'm forced to, because...
No, you don't have to. No, you really don't have to.
I just teach in the Cal State University.
Well, that's good enough for us. Okay, well, Mike is in California, and so, you know, Dr. Demery, Danny and I, we escaped.
He said escaped, wow.
No, that was a little joke, folks. No, actually, I love California. I had a really good time there. But anyway, Mike, Gary, and I'm going to call you an expert, Gary, if you don't mind, sir. Political science is his wheelhouse, and he does teach a variety or diversified class or classes of students, right? And you were talking about Christian nationalism. Did you bring that up?
I didn't, but I have been studying it quite a bit. In fact, I have been encouraged to do some writing on it, but at this point I haven't gotten started on it.
Okay. Tell us, what is Christian nationalism?
Christian nationalism, in my humble opinion, is a position taken by Christians who are generally biblical literalists and who put a perspective on their politics that the United States is a special chosen nation, and that in doing so, if they can completely take over what they call the seven pillars. These pillars range from government to entertainment to law, that it will hasten the return of Christ. And as a result of that, they also generally have a perspective that they are being persecuted by the government because of their beliefs, which if you want to look at just the terminology of persecution, I am very much a skeptic and a cynic that anybody in this country is persecuted for their religious beliefs. Just because someone doesn't agree with you doesn't mean that you're persecuted.
Okay. And I'm going to step aside, and I'm sure you have some questions for Gary before we get into the meet-up. We're just really getting started, and there's so much to cover. But before you do, and Gary, I thought there was, when it comes to politics, I thought it's supposed to be a separation of church and state, or church and religion, or there's supposed to be some separate some separation there, but it seems like everything
supposed
is,
to be.
Everything now it's like crossing over to lines where it may or may not be dangerous, but it kind of give us your take. Is there any such thing anymore about separation of church and state or church and state?
It depends on who you want, who you're talking to. If you look at the current makeup of the Supreme Court, I refer to them as SCOTUS, which is an acronym for Supreme Court of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They have, last year in Bremerton Kennedy, there was a football coach in Bremerton School District in Washington that was having prayer. He was a football coach, and he was having prayer on the field after football games. And imagine that you are a 15, 16-year-old football player in high school, and your coach is encouraging you to come to the prayer meeting after the football game. What are you going to do? Well, this ended up going before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is basically tearing down that wall of separation in just the area of prayer in schools, which was done back in the early 60s. I think it was started with an E, and I'd have to look it up, but there was a Supreme Court case that was done by the Burger Court, and they said that you could not pray in school because of the separation of church and state. This tearing down of this wall is being done very efficiently because of the fact that people want to believe that this nation was founded as a Christian nation, and that because of the fact that they believe this, they're wanting to change the course of this, of the United States, from going down the direction of secular to Christianity. But the problem is with that is that the very foundation of the United States was founded by heretics, and that ought to raise a few hackles. But when you look at the Pilgrims and when you look at the Separatists, that were the two groups that started the founding in the Plymouth Bay Colony and the area up there in New England, they were not Orthodox Christians. The Separatists had left the Church of England because they felt that the Church of England was too corrupt, and the Puritans were trying to make the Church of England purified. And one of those groups, I believe it was the Puritans, that even went to the Netherlands to escape England. And as a result of that, they went back to England because their children were becoming Dutch, and they did not like that. So they ended up getting a charter to become colonists in the United States, what eventually became the United States. And so they came to the United States, but they were not Orthodox Christians.
You know, the thing about
not orthodox, sir, with regard to the Church of England, no more than one can say they were very similar to the approach that Martin Luther took against the Catholic Church when he posted his 95 theses on the church, I believe it was in Worms, Germany, and that was because of the fact that he was not trying to overthrow the Catholic Church. He was just trying to point out areas that it needed to be changed that were corrupt. And as a result of that, they ended up excommunicating him. I'm not going down that road. That's not my wheelhouse. But my point is that to say that we were founded as a Christian nation, the question that I would ask each one of you is define Christian. At the time of the when the colonies, that we had the 13 colonies, if you ever look at a map that shows where all of the different religious groups that were in the United States, some of those very groups hated each other. Look at the beginning of Rhode Island. I think the guy's name was Roger Miller, got ran out of the Puritan society because of the fact that he did not hold the same views as what the rest of them did, so they ran them out. So when you look at the First Amendment and you look at the freedom of religion and the fact that the framers said that the Congress shall not make a law establishing religion, you got to think of it that religion is no more than the idea of being allowed the freedom to think. And you can therefore have your own opinion about what you think religion and God is. If you think that I'm wrong, then please explain to me why Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Satanists, Baptists, Methodists, the list is endless, all will make the claim that they pray to a God that they all think is the same God, but their interpretation is like if you get two lawyers in a room and ask them to give you an interpretation on the law, you're going to get at least three or four.
Yep. Every time.
Every time. And Ann,
every time.
I think that's a perfect segue to pass it over to you because Ann has to be, is it a family court judge, Ann?
No. Who told you that?
I'm asking, I asked the question.
I'm an administrative law judge. Totally
okay. Well, thank you, dear.
Totally different thing.
Hey, Gary, you see what I go through each and every Sunday? Yeah. Okay. Ann.
Totally I feel very bad for you, sir.
And you've only met her for 5 minutes, and so yep. And yeah, I tell you what, let's carry it around the table. I'm not going to hog the questions here, so I'm going to kick it off to you. Then we'll go to Brother Danny Tisdale, Dr. Demery, and then Mike.
All right. Well, hey everybody, I'm glad to see your faces. I know I've been out for a minute, so thank you for carrying a torch while I was a little busy, and thanks for being with us again, Mr. Is it Gary? Is
Hawk.
It H? Hawk.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. I really do question the fact of how those people could think that they're Bible literalists when, for me, it seems like they haven't read the Bible at all. What they seem to want, and I think it was Lauren Boebert who one time said, get rid of that church and state thing, which wouldn't be easy to do, Ms. Boebert, because it would take a whole lot for us to get rid of that particular provision. But that aside, if you were to read the Bible for yourself, and study it, you'll see throughout the Old Testament, beginning with the book of Exodus, that God's already done this. He's already shown us that even if we had a nation that was totally centered supposedly around him, that basically what you would have is a society that's just as corrupt as the one we've got now. The people who were supposed to be the spiritual leaders were corrupt. They put undue burdens on the Israelites, and they themselves were hypocrites. And not only that, everyday life was centered around whether or not you had a connection to the synagogue. And if you got booted out of what we would call the church nowadays, then life for you was basically impossible. And this is what it seems to me like Christian nationalists are sort of advocating that we go back to. God himself destroyed that system. If you remember in the New Testament, Jesus was mad when he was at the temple because of the hypocrisy that he saw going on right there at the church. On the one hand, you want to put all these burdens on the people, but you've got this relationship with the merchants, allowing them to come into the temple and sell their wares. Another example was when they brought the woman who was caught in adultery before Jesus so that she could be stoned to death. But curiously, the man who she was with was nowhere to be found. It's that type of political and religious hypocrisy that the Lord was showing us. This will happen even if you have people supposedly who worshiped him in charge of everything. And we're seeing that kind of play out, even though we don't have that in our country yet. Hopefully never we will have that in our country. But you already see that dynamic playing out in the people who are proponents of this. And how is it that they even have it in their mind that they're the new children of Israel? I don't understand. Because I don't recall Abraham being sent to North America, and that North America became the promised land. I just don't. But that's what they seem to think. And where they get this from? I mean, it reminds me of that scripture in the Bible that, you know, that says that sometimes people listen to the doctrine of demons. And I really do believe that that's what they're buying into so that they can, get their political ideology, not just their political ideology. It's basically their hatred. It's a way to, I guess you can say, make their hatred for other people, for other countries, for people who don't think like them, people with disabilities, people that they just in general don't like. This is a way for them to say, okay, we got biblical basis for what we think and what we believe. It is absolute insanity to anybody who truly believes in God, because it's against everything that the Bible tells us that we are supposed to be. We're supposed to be, and Reverend Dimmer can tell you if I'm making it up, because he's the Bible scholar. The Bible says we're supposed to be impartial, meaning we aren't biased, meaning we don't discriminate. We're supposed to love justice. As a matter of fact, we're supposed to be filled with the Holy Spirit in such a way that you can see his fruits, so to speak, on us, meaning his characteristics in us. We're supposed to be filled with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. And these people who are claiming to be Christian nationalists have none of those characteristics at all. In fact, it's just the opposite. So I truly hope that this minority of individuals, even though it's a bunch of them, there are a lot of them, and they are loud, rowdy, violent bunch. I do hope that their movement, for lack of a better word, is stopped in its tracks.
Mm. Danny, Dr. Tisdale, sir,
yeah.
Comment and or question for Gary.
I would like to say I am so in agreement with Anne and all that she has spoken to and the ridiculousness of it all. And even this point with them making laws and leading us to believe that they've taken prayer out of school. They may have put it on the books, but I guarantee you that a true Christian in the middle of school before a test can pray and they will never have to
know about it. Exactly.
So they can do whatever they think they want to try to remove certain things out of different places and legislate laws against, but they can't take away what's already present. When you read the Word of God, one of the most powerful tools that you have is prayer. Mm-hmm. Prayer can change things. Mm-hmm. And anybody, Christian nationalists, or whatever they profess to be, they professing to be a Christian with the word of Christ, which is even within that word, then you have to have a mind of Christ. You have to have the same fruits that Christ had. And on the feast of Passover, when the money changers had set up all these little coffers in different ways that the money would come in, Jesus was upset at that because they tried to merchandise that whole situation, and he shut it down. This world is going to be a witness to God as he intervened in everything that's taking place, as we're seeing it right now, the demonic impression and the evilness that exists today is predicated directly upon the hatred, whether, you know, it's taught. Hatred is a taught behavior. But love, again, I will always continue to say, is organic. And when we operate within love, we can conquer anything. Even the boy that killed those three people, if they were to bring him into our presence, we still have to find the very difficult challenge that may exist to find some kind of love to even express them. And that's what the Bible tells us to do. None of this stuff that I'm speaking of is easily done, but you will win when you always operate in love. That's my take.
Amen. Well, I've got to say this. I truly do agree completely with the prayer thing, because the Bible makes it clear that we're supposed to pray without ceasing. So if that's the case, if I'm supposed to pray without ceasing, then how am I supposed to go to work? How am I supposed to go to school? How am I supposed to wash dishes? God does not expect me to be on my knees 24/7 praying. That is not what that means. I'm supposed to be in constant communication with him. And one of the things we don't seem to understand about prayer, is that prayer is one of the many ways that we solidify our relationship with the Lord. And if you have a relationship with somebody, it's not always all about you. So you get sick and tired of people who only want to do all the talking about themselves. Every now and then you want to be listened to. So if you've got a quote unquote relationship with the Lord and all you do is get on your knees and treat him like he's your personal Santa Claus or ATM, you know what I'm saying, to get you what you want, then I would suggest that you probably do not have a relationship with the Lord the way that you think you do. The Lord says that he calls us friend. And so if he calls us friend, that means he talks to us too. And I know that there are some preachers out there and even some, you know, some just regular folks out there who will tell you that if the Lord is talking to you, you need to see a doctor. But there is talking to you and there is talking to you. Having a relationship with the Lord, means that you will be communicated back to in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And Jesus says his sheep know his voice. So if that's the case, then that means we are supposed to expect to hear his voice, and expect to recognize his voice instead of, you know, the voice of the enemy. But it also means that at some point during the day, I don't care if you're driving, I don't care if your boss is getting on your nerves, there will come a time where you're probably going to be going to say, okay, Lord, if you don't help me, I'm going to flip the bird on this person who just cut me off. I'm going to say something very disrespectful to my boss and lose my job. You know what I'm saying? You will have that type of conversation, which is what prayer is, with the Lord. And you should, in my opinion, in my experience, get some type of response. There are some times when stuff is bothering me and I go to pray to the Lord, and before I can say a word, the Lord's presence fills me so that all I can do is listen to him. He's like, okay, that is nothing. I already took care of that. I got something to tell you. Just be quiet. Listen. If that's what a relationship is. You should have a relationship, you know, with the Lord so that he communicates with you too. If nothing else going on in your life, this thing that you've made, this huge Mount Everest moment, so that he can show you this is not even a pebble in your way. You'll be able to walk over that, but we got something else that's more important. So that's just me. I agree wholeheartedly. If you are really a Christian and you are praying without ceasing, you should be praying at all times. There will be a all day moment in your life of prayer. Let's just put it that way. But Reverend Demery, I'm interested to know what you think, and as well as if you have any questions for Mr. Gary Hall. You're on mute.
Well, we're throwing out a lot of things. I know Gary's going to have a hard time responding to all of us, but I'm changing gears for getting a prayer thing. But here's something that really bothers me along the political realms and the political lines. How you can get someone like that in, and maybe I shouldn't call it idiot. The Bible says about people, but you know, that Palin up in Alaska. What an nincompoop.
You know, that's the same word, Reverend Demery. Yeah, nincompoop, idiot, same thing.
What really irks me is that how you can take someone who is supposedly out of politics back into politics and then threaten the United States by saying, if Trump goes to jail, there's going to be a civil war. Mm-hmm. You know how serious that is, what she was saying? I know a lot of it's ridiculous, but I mean, how just asinine that is to me, if she thinks, because if he goes to jail for something that he did, and we were talking about at the beginning of William was talking about how, you know, we're supposed to be a country of laws, and if you do the crime, you're supposed to do time. But here we have someone who, to me, it sounds like, I could be wrong, Gary, maybe you can respond, but what it sounds like to me, he's basically threatening the United States by saying that there will be a civil war. And most people don't understand what a civil war is. I mean, we went through one in the...
You're breaking up. Can you turn your phone a little bit like you did before? I think that'll clear it up.
How's that? Maybe
that's better.
Is that better? Mm-hmm. So the thing that really irks me is how you can get this individual who can get up and make, actually, to me, it sounds like threats that mm-hmm. if you don't do this, this is going to happen. You know, from a geopolitical social standpoint, to be able to say if someone goes to jail. I mean, and then I just don't understand how people get back at them. You know, I don't understand it. Wrong for criticizing it, but you know, Bible sees you. But I really buy that.
You're breaking up again.
And I know there's a lot of things that I need to ask God to forgive me for, but that's one of them. So Gary, I don't know what you see where I'm going with this. How an individual can basically threaten the fabric of the United States by saying, if he goes to jail, there's going to be a civil war. I mean, that just irks me.
Mr. Hawk, do you have a response?
Yeah, but I don't think any of you are going to like it.
Go ahead. We're listening.
You're safe here. Don't worry, sir.
Yeah. We all have different opinions about stuff, so go right ahead.
I'm going to do this just like you were in my class.
All right.
There's a theory from public choice economics that talks about preferences, beliefs, and paradigms. You all have preferences. Just by the basis of the makeup of this panel, even though Mr. Ward has yet to speak, I know that each one of you look at things through the eyes of being a Christian. And so, therefore, your beliefs are based on your preferences of Christianity, and that's the way you see the world. Mm-hmm. So let's just change things just a wee bit.
Okay.
Let's look at it through the eyes of your favorite ice cream or your top three places that you would like to go on your favorite or dream vacation. Maybe your top three places that you would go for a vacation would be Los Angeles, Berkeley, and San Diego. Mm-hmm. That's Miss Taylor's choice. Mr. Ward's choice might be Berkeley, San Diego, L.A. And Dr. Dimmery's choice might be San Diego, Berkeley, L.A. You see how all three of you sit from the same set of locations can have different preferences. Mm-hmm. And those preferences are how you see the world. Mm-hmm. So if you were to look at the world of religion, because remember, the Constitution does not establish any religion. And if you read what Thomas Jefferson and John Adams had to say about religion, they don't say some very nice things. In fact, at one time in Virginia, you would be fined if you did not go to church. That was Christianity. And you also got to remember that they had just lived about 60 to 70 years before all of this. There was a 30 years war that was a religious war in Europe, and millions of people got killed over which God and which church they attended. Mm-hmm. Okay? So what you end up with is you have a group of individuals who met in Philadelphia and says, we really don't think we need to have this. That's my take on this. Mm-hmm. So they did not establish a religion. And as one of you spoke about, what religion would you propose? I don't know you all that well, but if one of you was a Baptist, you're going to argue, because of your preferences, beliefs, and paradigm, you're going to argue that we're going to make the United States a country that is a Baptist nation. Mm-hmm. Now, if one of you is a Methodist, guess what? There's an immediate conflict. Mm-hmm. If one of you is an AME and another one of you is a Catholic, you're immediately going to have a problem, because they're not going to see it the same. On a side note, not to go down the rabbit trail, but for the first time in the history of the United States, the majority of the Supreme Court is made up of Catholics. Mm-hmm. So let's look at this just a little bit closer, because the Constitution doesn't refer to a particular religion. It says that no established religion should be there. But the other thing that I want you to think about may upset you, but it's just the way I am. You are a Christian, no matter what part of the underneath the umbrella you want to place yourself, because you were born in the United States. If you were born in the Middle East, you would either be a Muslim or a Jew. If you were born in Indonesia, you would be born into the largest population of Muslims in the world, unless you were born on the island of Bali, and then you would be a Hindu. If you were born in India, you would be a Hindu. My point in poking the bear is, the reason why the Constitution is written the way that it is because of the fact that people will fight over two things. Mm. You know what they are? Religion
and money
and politics. In fact, most of you here, I assume, are Christians. Mm-hmm. What was the first murder over in the Bible? The very first murder was Cain and Abel. And what was it over? It was over this proper sacrifice. God did not accept one sacrifice because there was no blood associated with it. So Cain got jealous because Abel's sacrifice had blood. And so therefore Cain got jealous and killed him. My point on this, and I want to drive it home if you were in my class, is in the eyes of the law, you're entitled to your own preferences, beliefs, and paradigm. More power to you. But your right of freedom on that ends at the end of your arm and the beginning of my nose.
All right. All right.
It doesn't matter to me. It shouldn't matter to you if your neighbor is of a different religion. The main thing is, and again, I get a little preachy about this, is what is the greatest commandment Jesus said that was for the greatest commandment? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And if you don't treat people right, if you don't treat them with justice and fairness and mercy, then you're not even following your own book.
Wow. Mike?
Now,
I'm sorry, Gary. Go ahead, Gary.
Dr. Demery raised the question as to what, if I remember it, Dr. Demery, if I'm wrong, help me out. The point was, is that why are people being so divisive over the affairs of politics today, correct? Okay, let's go back in history. Most people do not pay attention to this. I don't have any comments about it because you'll just get me ranting and you don't want that. But clear back in 1787, when we adopted the Constitution, there was a fight over the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. Can one of you please tell me who the Anti-Federalists were and who the Federalists were?
I can't.
Republican, Democrat.
There was no political parties back then.
It was the Confederate and the other side, yes.
That was at the time of the Civil War, was the Confederacy and the Union. But I'm talking about at the time that the Constitution was written, there were two groups. There was the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. And they came out of the fact that they had discovered that the Articles of Confederation, which was the first national constitution, was a big failure. The anti-federalists wanted a very weak federal government because they had just lived under the tyranny of King George III, and they didn't want that to be repeated under a new federal government. The federalists said, hey, under the Articles of Confederation, we don't have a military, we can't pay our taxes, foreign governments will not loan us money, we want a strong federal government. Those same arguments are the same arguments that are being made to this very day between the donkeys and the elephants. And the only difference is that they've changed the fashion of the clothes and we no longer wear wigs. But it's the same argument. So, is it any different today than it was back then? Well, at least ways, I forget the name of the congressman. We haven't had a congressman beaten on the floor of the House of Representatives or the Senate, I forget which one, to the point the man died a short time later. We haven't reached the point that we're pulling out guns and killing each other because of the fact that you're a donkey and I'm an elephant, or an elephant and or a donkey. So the same structure is still there because, as I said before, there's two things that people will not change their preferences, beliefs and paradigms, and that's politics and religion, even when confronted with new facts.
Mm.
Correct facts. They will modify their paradigm, but they will not accept the new one.
Isn't that something? Alternative facts, no such thing. Hey, Mike, comment and or question.
Well, first, am I on? Yeah, I am. Okay. So I'm not qualified to speak on this. I'll be very honest with all of you. I'm not a biblical scholar in any way, shape, or form. I have a very simplistic view of religion. And I've spoken about it with William, and I've spoken about it here on the Boomerang. And Gary, thanks for being with us today, by the way. My view of religion is, again, very simplistic. It's good versus evil. Hmm. And I don't really take it much further than that. So I hope Gary agrees with me here, but all decent religions break down to at least that form, good versus evil. If you're involved in some religion that has, some evil thoughts to it or evil pursuits to it, then you're not in a bona fide religion. Second, and I've spoken about this before, man will find a way to stand on their brother's neck. And they'll do it with religion. And if you don't believe me, look at the Irish. You had two supposedly bona fide religions, good versus evil. You had the Catholics and the Protestants, and yet they were blowing each other up over it. And probably still killing each other over it to some degree. Hopefully it's lessened. I believe that we are on a bad path as far as religion and politics goes, because it's more and more corrupt. I was born in 1956, and in my time here on Earth, I've seen things, at least in my opinion, become worse. And become more evil and become more demonic. And again, we're just not going in the right direction. I believe in freedom of speech. I think that, what do they say? Sunlight is a great disinfectant. So I believe in allowing people to speak, because if they're evil and you let them speak, they'll show their evilness along the way. They'll show the poison that's in their soul. The best experience I've had of demonstrating this is, Gary doesn't know, but Gary, I'm retired from the Sheriff's Department out here in California. And I started originally on a mounted crew. So we would be out there during parades and such. And there's a parade in Fontana on, I think it was on Foothill or Baseline. I don't remember which street, doesn't matter. But the head guy for the KKK was out here in Fontana. I forget that there's a term that they applied to him. Anyway, Grand Wizard, I think. Grand Wizard. Dr. Demery speaking, but we can't hear you, sir.
No, that was Danny. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Demery.
Well, I was saying, he was top of
I'm sorry, Dr. Demery, we can't hear you. You might want to switch computers. You might want to switch computers.
His name was George Pepper, and he was the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan in Fontana.
There it is. Thank you, Dr. Demery. I appreciate that. So I'm very young at the time. I'm on a mounted crew, and they're doing this big parade, and it's the KKK parade. And I know that I've told this story before, but Gary hasn't heard it. So I'm out there, and while I'm protecting these people for their freedom of speech, I certainly don't agree with them. I don't agree with their poison, but it was my job to protect that right for them to speak. And I took it serious. And while I was on my horse, Windsor was his name, Little Windsor. I was on Windsor, and I'm protecting these guys, and of course there's people protesting it, which is their right to do as well. And while I'm sitting there, my mother's words came back to me. And she used to say, my mom, by the way, Gary, was from Scotland. She met my dad during World War II. And she used to say to all three of us kids, she used to say that trash comes in all colors. Mm. And I understood that. But while I'm sitting there that day at that particular time, the reverse of that, my mother's words came to me, which was, if trash comes in all colors, good must come in all colors. Mm. So, and that's, I'm very thankful that my parents had that perspective of, or perception, I guess would be a better word, of races and colors and creeds and religions, that everybody has a right to believe what they believe, and they should have a right to freely speak about all of that. So I don't know if it's fitting in the vein of what we're discussing here today, but again, I break religion down to very simplistic terms, which is good versus evil. And from there, then you can build on that into what mm-hmm. Gary's talking about is your own perception. You can layer on top of the good versus evil, but you got to start with the good versus evil. So yeah. That's my perspective, and thank you guys.
Yeah. Oh, hey, well, you are going
anywhere. Mr. Ward, may I respond to him, please?
Yes, please. Go on.
I'm going to play devil's advocate with you just for grins and giggles.
Sure.
Okay? The only problem with the good versus evil argument is you got to define what's good and what's evil. What's good to one person is going to be evil to somebody else and vice versa. True. I really appreciated your comment on stand on their brother's neck. That's still the same problem that we've got in today's religion all the time.
Mm.
And it's because of the fact of the corruption of religion. There is an author, he's dead now, and I believe I'm attributing it to him. He's the atheist Christopher Hitchens. He said that, you know, the Bible says that God created man. And he took the other argument, the counter argument, that and said, no, man created God, because everybody has their own interpretation as to what God is. Wow. If you think I'm crazy, look at the Hindus. They don't look at God the same way. Look at the Jews. They don't look at God the same way as the Christians. In fact, even Christians sometimes don't even agree on what God, who and what God is. And if you push me, I can do that farther with you.
Buddha was a human being, correct?
Correct. So how you want to determine what religion's all about, that's the problem with Christian nationalism. Then we have the corruption of religion. Catholic Church. What'd they do? Yeah, I don't mean to bash people that are Catholic, but it's a fact of history. They greatly helped get involved with the slave trade.
Mm.
Southern white ministers. They used the Bible and said, hey, slavery's justified. And one of their favorite one was to use, I believe it's the book of Philemon out of the New Testament. You know, go back to your master. They used the Old Testament. And yet people in the North read the exact same book, came to a completely different explanation to it,
mm-hmm.
and we ended up shooting each other. The only good thing about it was that all of my friends that are on here right now that don't look like me are no longer somebody's personal chattel property.
Mm.
The other one is that Mr. Ward said he was a cop. And this is kind of the same way it is with religion. Or a retired cop. First of all, thank you for your service. But the second thing is, and I'm sure he could, and I think Dr. Demery was a policeman at one time early in his life, that guess what? They can both tell you there's good cops and bad cops. Mm-hmm. Just like there's good people in religion, there's bad people in religion. There's good professors and bad professors. Mm-hmm. There's good administrative law judges. There's bad administrative law judges. There's good radio talk show hosts, bad radio talk shows. Shall I continue?
We got the point.
William, maybe some people in the audience
who want one more time. Hey, Gary, the fact that you came on with us, you think we're good. So I'll take that. I'm going to take it. I'm going to steal it, Gary. Okay. Thank you, sir.
I don't have a problem coming on here because you guys have – I've listened to your show since the first time, not all the time, but I have listened to it. And there's been a few changes from when I listened to it, Mr. Tisdale and Mr. Ward. Ms. Taylor and Dr. Demery and Mr. Brown are still here. And you guys have some interesting conversations. And some of your conversations, I'm glad I'm not there.
Gary,
you called me Ann, Mr. Hogg. Gary,
we appreciate that. We certainly appreciate that, which is a perfect segue into, I want to ask about our sitting Congress right now and our sitting politicians right now. And I guarantee you that if there are polls out, which I used to see polls all the time, and the other two branches.
Let Danny in there. Danny's got.
Oh, I'm sorry, Danny. Go on.
Before you segue out, let me ask Dr. Hall this. Break down the difference between religion and spirituality.
Ooh.
Dr. Tisdale, I apologize. I cannot answer that question because. Okay. I am not a religious scholar. I never studied religion in an academic setting. I can only tell you that Dr. Demery has. Dr. Demery is very intelligent and smart about that, and I can't answer it, and I'm not going to even attempt.
Okay.
Not getting in that hole.
He's not doing it. Well, let Dr. Demery answer that then, please.
Well, just to be really quick about it. I hope you can hear me okay. I know I was breaking up earlier. But the difference between the two is this. Religion is a set of polity and issues that's established by humankind. That's what basically religion is. It's a set of rules and regulations, interpretations that humankind has developed. Spirituality is one where people interact with who they believe the spirit is. And what form of spirituality they particularly believe is as wide as the sea and as deep as the ocean. So that's a real rough definition of what it is, but it's a little more complex than that, obviously, because then you have to say, well, you're not really defining what spirituality is, because that gets a little complex. But religion is basically a set of rules. People said, like, there's Baptist, there's Methodist, there's Presbyterian, there's Episcopalian, there's Pentecostal. So each one of those groups have established of rules and regulations and how you're supposed to believe according to if you're going to be a good Baptist or a good Methodist or a good Episcopalian or a good Presbyterian, you know, then, you know, you have to believe in Calvinist because basically Presbyterians are called Calvinists. And things that you have to do to be a good Catholic. That's religion.
Right. Hey, Dr. Demery, I have a question for you. Because, yes. I agree with everything that you say there. Can it be, and depending on who you are, what church you're affiliated with, or what religious group you're affiliated with, and it seems like to me that some of them take on a cult of personality. It just seems like they have developed a cult, and they don't follow the word as written, they will take out what, you know, the things that, they think they can use to turn the story in their favor. But to me,
William. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. I mean, we look at people that started out in, you know, supposedly good faith-based religions and we turned into a cult. Look at Koresh. Look at Jim Jones. Look at all those people. They started out in basic faith-based religions and, look what it turned into because the individuals were psychotic.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Now I'm going to segue into Gary. I got a question for you and then we're going around the panel again. How much do you think that our politicians contribute to and or flame and ignite, or they're part of the problem as far as racism is concerned in this country? The reason why I'm asking that is that I'm, you know, people talk about this good size argument and stuff like that. And I can say there are certain members of Congress that they, I mean, they spew this garbage, right? And they use buzzwords or bullhorns of a racist nature. And I think that they are major contributors because they have a platform. They're always on TV. They're there. And the problem is because they have these positions, this hierarchy here, people tend to believe what they say and act on what they hear from the leaders that are supposed to be passing sensible laws and doing things for the betterment of all people. How much do our politics contribute to inflame the fires of racism?
Mr. Brown, I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Do that, please.
Take the word racism out.
Okay.
And let's discuss garbage rates in your city.
Mm. Mm. Okay.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because I just changed the paradigm of the way you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I understand that you as a black man, me as a white man who believes in what the Declaration of Independence says, that all men are created equal. And when I say all men are created equal, I don't care your religion, your skin color, your gender, your sexual orientation, your religion, whatever adjective you want to use to describe yourself, you're equal. It's just that simple. However, when you are in a position of power, that paradigm changes. Why is that? Because you're appealing to two groups. The first one is that you're appealing to yourself because you are an elected politician, and as long as you get getting elected, you pretty well got a sweet, comfy job. Let's just be honest. They got to put up with a lot of stuff, but they're usually egocentric people to begin with. They want the taste of power, and as Dr. Dimery likes to remind me, the power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's the first one. And the second one is you got to look at who their base is. Now, Maxine Waters in L.A., who is an African-American, would no way want to come out and make derogatory remarks about her fellow black citizens. She'd never get elected. But if you live in an area where there is an underlying level of racism and these people voted for you, you're going to use that kind of political speech. The second thing is the purpose of using that kind of speech is to drive wedges between people. Mm. Classic one, abortion. Mm. Another one, LGBTQ rights. Those are two wedge issues that have been purposely framed to divide people.
Agreed.
Yes.
Which completely contradicts what I started off with about the Declaration of Independence, the ideal that we really want to live by. But it's easier to divide. So do politicians blame? Sure they do. Go back to all of us that are sitting here of approximately, please don't hate me, about the same age. Remember the Vietnam War?
Oh, I do. Ann doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, she probably read about it.
The Vietnam War was a very upsetting time, and politicians worked it both ways. There was the domino theory. We have to support the South Vietnamese, or otherwise it's going to fall to the communists, and then it'll go to Thailand and Laos and Cambodia and all the way around the world, or whatever the theory was. That was one. You also have the thing that came up when President Bush was there, and he took the position that you're either for us or against us. These aren't racial things, but it's inflammatory speech made by politicians to persuade and create a a support amongst the citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the number one goal of a politician?
To get reelected.
To get reelected or to move up in office, to obtain a higher step on the ladder, so to speak. That's their number one goal. If you think politicians are out there to care for us, you are, yeah, you're full of, you know.
Go ahead and say it. Go ahead. We're listening.
You know, I wish I had a bleep. Mike, I don't have a bleeper, so, you know, you can, you know, paraphrase.
I'll beep for you. Go ahead, say it. I'll beep.
There you go.
Yeah, we got the point. Danny, you leaning closer, Danny. You have.
I'm just leaning in because this is so interesting, and I really like the way Gary, he likes to play the devil's advocate.
Uh-huh.
And is there another advocate that you like to play to outside the devil's advocate?
Good question.
Are you speaking to me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I refer to the devil's advocate because that's a historical terminology that came from, if I remember correctly, and I'm sure Dr. Dimmery can correct me if I'm wrong, it came from the Inquisition, where the accused was standing in front of the jury or whatever they called it back then for the, if you were accused of being a heretic, then they had somebody that was, that their official title was to take the opposite position as the devil's advocate. And so for me, I use that as a way to make people, stop and think about what they're saying and what they're arguing for, because when you get confronted by somebody, and we're not having a yelling, screaming match between the reds and the blues in this group, then you can end up having a very mature, comfortable discussion and move the boundaries of knowledge a little bit further. And so I play that role only because of the fact that, A, yeah, I teach, want my students to think, and two, it's just more comfortable for me.
I got it. And one further question. So from the Federalist to the Anti-Federalist, do you think that the political parties for which we see the donkeys and the elephant derive from those two different positions?
They don't derive directly. When I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking more in terms of philosophy, political philosophy of those parties. The Federalist died out. If I remember correctly, the last Federalist president was the second one, which was John Adams, because by then, political parties were coming into form. In fact, Thomas Jefferson was a Democratic Republican. And then we had the Whigs and all the rest of them, and they came and went. We've had the Democrats and the Republicans or donkeys and elephants, which is less inflammatory speech. We've had them for quite some time, and it'll be interesting whether or not the elephants can survive the current political climate in its present form, or if they will reform, splinter, or do something else. But I can remember here quite a few years ago, they said that we were going to see the demise of the donkeys too. Well, they turned things around, and you know, in some places they're in the catbird seat, and in other places they're riding in the caboose. So when it comes to that kind of stuff, no. The thing to remember about the philosophy, political philosophy of the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the reason why the Federalists are the most well-known was because of the marketing campaign by Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and James Madison. They wrote the Federalist Papers. I would highly recommend to you that if you want supposedly the best commentary on the Constitution, that you get a copy of it. It's get it at a used bookstore, real cheap, because nobody wants to read it. It's boring. Or you can download a copy of it off, like Barnes & Noble's or Amazon or iBooks or something, and go through and read it. And if you're not sure who those people were, well, James Madison was involved with the writing of the Constitution. Highlight was he served as President of the United States. John Jay was Secretary of State. He was also an ambassador, as well as the very first Supreme Court Justice of SCOTUS, and Hamilton is a guy that he's dancing and singing right now, I believe, on Broadway in New York.
Let me ask you this too, Dr. Hull. You are probably knowledgeable in this area. The process of capitalism being implemented in the United States, when do you know what year that was?
When what was implemented?
Capitalism, what we operate in our economics today. Mm. Everything is they say we live in capitalism is the way our business and the economy is ran right now. Is that?
Well, I kind of narrow it down to three different eras. We started off with barter, and there's still areas of the world where barter takes place. From barter, we moved into mercantilism. Mercantilism led us to colonialism, and it was the idea that you wanted more exports and imports, because the more exports you had, at that time the medium of exchange was gold, so it would make your national treasury richer. The other problem with that was is that through colonization, you ended up with the problems that we have and that it occurred in North and South America, where the, especially the Spanish conquistadors took over, well-established civilizations, you know, the Incas, the Aztecs, and other places that they just conquered, took all their gold, turned their people into slaves, exposed them to smallpox and things of that nature, and it was brutal warfare. And in fact, if I can just go down a rabbit hole for a second, the same thing happened when English people started to take over North America. We would trade with the Plains Indians and give them blankets that were infested with smallpox, you know. So the point is that was, we went from mercantilism into capitalism, and generally it's probably, and this, it gets kind of fuzzy to give you a date and a year. Okay. That we moved from mercantilism into capitalism about the time of the Industrial Age. One could argue that because of the fact that tariffs that were imposed by Secretary of the Treasury Alexander Hamilton, that we were still working on, who was Secretary of Treasury under Washington, we were still working under a mercantilism type of economy. But the basic founding of capitalism was there. Another problem with mercantilism was that it's an extractive type of economy, where you go in and, you know, think of all the beaver pelts that got shipped to England for the big hats for the gentry of England. We would grow tobacco, and it all got sent back to England. That's the kind of stuff that takes place in the idea of colonies, slavery, things of that nature.
Mm.
And within that realm somewhere, I don't know if you've read that book, The Secret or The Mystery of Jekyll Island, where all the rich